Good afternoon, and welcome to Parshas Noach 57:65. We have a little bit of a task at hand before we can begin. Every year, I try to present the Parsha with a particular approach, a particular commentary, or a particular theme, which we try to explore in each Parsha. And at the beginning of every cycle of Parshios, it is incumbent upon me to find a new approach. And every year, I think to myself, that's it. I don't know where to go next. But somehow, Hashem has guided the way, and we have found, at the end of the path, signs to the next path. Last year, Baruch Hashem, we had the wonderful experience and pleasure of studying the works of Michtav Me Eliyahu, literally letters from Eliyahu, by Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler, blessed memory, written by his students. Rabbi Dessler was a teacher of Torah and Musar. Musar is a common term which we're going to use, the study of Torah from a particular emphasis on personal growth and development. Rav Dessler taught Torah and Musar in the middle of the 20th century, both in England and in Israel. I had the privilege of studying from one of his students, in fact, one of the co-editors of Michtav Me Eliyahu, for a very short time. He was older, but I did have a glimpse into the world that he inherited from Rav Dessler. And Rav Dessler primarily speaks about themes. There are some parshios where he has essays on the parsha, but mostly it's about the themes, and the basic themes of Musar, the basic themes of Ruchnius, spirituality, Torah spirituality, versus Gashmius, physicality. That's a very popular theme. Another popular theme of Rav Dessler and of Musar in general is based on a verse, V'yadato hayom v'hashevoso el levovecha. You say it in Aleinu. You should know today and you should bring it to your heart. And that the process of Jewish learning is a two-step process. One is intellectual and the other is personal and emotional. God asks of us not only to study the words of the Torah to gain the information and the mental insight, but then to translate it into personal development and growth. And therefore, we studied a lot of different topics having to do with the human being, the different qualities and potential qualities within the human being, such as chesed, kindness, the midah of emes, the midah of truth, and the ability of man to find the truth, although he is filled with lots of imaginary truths. And most recently, we studied about the very, very major tenet of bechira, of choice. How does man make a choice? What is within his realm of choice and what isn't? And so on. These were some of the themes that we studied with Rav Dessler and many others. And to quote one of our regulars, I'm going to miss Rav Dessler. And I'm going to miss Rav Dessler. Where are we going from here? So I just had a thought that, this is a Parsha class. And I wanted to find something which combines the teachings of Musar with the Chumash more. And I knew there was something out there. And I remember about a year ago, I had a casual conversation with Rabbi Reuven Stein, the director of the AKC, who says that every year he studies the Parsha with a different commentary. And I remember him once telling me there's a great Sefer written by one of the pre-war Musar teachers in Europe, Rabbi Yerucham Halevi Lubavitz. Rabbi Lubavitz was the Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual dean of the Mirror Yeshiva, not the Mirror Yeshiva of Brooklyn, not even the Mirror Yeshiva of Yerushalayim, but the Mirror Yeshiva of all places, Mir, which is a small town in Poland. But that yeshiva, Mir, which was also under threat, and they ran away as an entire school to Shanghai, and they conducted their yeshiva during a few of the war years in Shanghai, China, as the Mir Yeshiva. There are still people among us living today that studied in Shanghai. I think there are still people that studied in Poland. But anyway, if you mention the word, the yeshiva of Mir, Poland, the name Rav Yerucham comes up. And even more, I feel I want to give a little bit of an introduction of the teacher that we're going to have throughout the entire year, God willing. Nowadays, in his older years, there is one man who is probably recognized throughout the world as the authority of Musar. His name, does anybody know who I'm referring to? Rabbi Palm. Rabbi Palm, of blessed memory, has passed away. He was a Rosh Hashiva. He was a walking Musar Sefer, because all of these great people have Musar inside of them. But he was the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the head of the yeshiva. He gave the Talmud class, gave the smicha, etc. But when a Musar teacher is somebody who is devoted primarily to the teaching and the disseminating of Musar, and every yeshiva has one. But this was like the senior. I'll give you a hint. We had in our community several months ago, Rabbi Feldman brought in a rabbi from Israel, Rabbi Leuchter. Rabbi Reuven Leuchter, some of you may have heard him, he gave a talk in the conference room. He is one of the up-and-coming Baalei Musar of the generation. He's probably in his 50s, early 50s. They say that he is known as the Mashgiach in Yerushalayim. If you ask for the Mashgiach, they say, you mean Rabbi Leuchter? Mashgiach is like the dean of the yeshiva, the Musar supervisor. So if you say that somebody is the Mashgiach of Yerushalayim, that's a pretty big accolade. He is the student of the person that I'm referring to. Does anybody remember? He probably mentioned his name. His name is Rabbi Shlomo Volbe, or Wolbe in English, W-O-L-B-E. Rabbi Volbe was like the heir to the Musar tradition, and he established the first of its kind, a yeshiva of Musar, called the Beis HaMusar. The Musar movement, by the way, is said to have started in the middle of the 1800s, or the early 1800s, by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And in fact, he has a very important sefer, which has been recently translated, and it's been circulating around here because the translator came in the summertime as a scholar in residence. Anyways, not to go through the whole history. So Rabbi Volbe is today one of the great Musar teachers of our time. There's a sefer that he wrote about 30 years ago based on discourses that he gave in the yeshiva where he was the Mashgiach in the south of Israel, a place called Be'er Yaakov. And I opened up when I heard about Rabbi Yerucham, I said, wait, there's a connection between Rabbi Yerucham and Rabbi Volbe. So let me look at the introduction to Rabbi Volbe's Sefer and see if he mentions his Rabbi Yerucham. I came upon the following paragraph, which I will paraphrase. Rabbi Rolba, by the way, wrote this anonymously. His name does not appear in the book. This is what he writes in his introduction. The author of this Sefer, when he was young in age, was brought by a whirlwind into the mechitza, into the domain of a great giant of a man. Adonenu, Morenu, Rabbeinu, Maorenenu. Our master, our teacher, our rabbi, the light of our eyes, Mechaye Mesim B'Mamarav, one who revives the dead with his words. Moran Rabbeinu Yerucham Halevi. Our master, Rav Yerucham Halevi, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha. The memory of the righteous and the holy be for a blessing. In the yeshiva of Mir. This author was young and small, and he remains young and small and humble. And to be included in the students of this great man who are today genius and great, he did not merit to enter. That's Rabbi Volba. To enter, Rabbi Volba talking. But he became a different man. And from his flesh, he saw what it means for the dew of resurrection that the Torah of man and the life of man, the life of a man as great as someone can do. All right, I won't read everything. He says basically that he lives his whole life to try to recapture the feeling of exaltedness, awe, joy, and spiritual hislavus, excitement and holiness that was awoken in his heart, being in the environs of this great man. That's how he lives his whole life, to try to get back to where he was in Mir. And this is what guided him in his various teachings, and on and on. Rav Volba himself is a giant that I could not even begin to describe. So, we're talking about his teacher. And I also remember once upon a time reading a book, All for the Boss, which was an autobiography of a Rebbetzin, Ruchama Shein. May she live and be well. She lives in Jerusalem. She and her husband, in their young years of marriage, spent some years in Mir in Poland. Her father was literally one of the Torah pioneers in America. He was a businessman, but he raised the banner of Torah observance in New York City in the early 1900s that made an indelible mark, in addition to his children that made an indelible mark. Rav Scheinberg, Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Zecher Shlita, may live and be well, was the son-in-law of this man. And this is written by his daughter, Ruchama Shein, who got married and moved to Poland. And Rabbi Yerucham was one of her husband's teachers. So she writes about him, and there's a picture. So I thought you might like to see the picture, because so far, Art Scroll has not come out with the autobiography of Rabbi Yerucham yet. So I just wanted to show you. She does introduce who he is. She says, she used to write letters home to her parents. Dearest Papa and Mama, our second Shabbos in Mir, we visited the Mashkiach and his family. They live a few blocks from our house. As you know, Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz is one of the greatest Mashkichim of this generation. He is a disciple of the famous yeshiva of Kelem, where the Musar movement of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter developed. He has been Mashkiach in Mirror Yeshiva for over 20 years, and all revere him. Okay, so that's the picture of Rav Yerucham. You can pass that around. So, meet our Rebbe.
But this is not Rabbi Volba, this is Rabbi...
Rabbi Volba's teacher, Rabbi Yerucham. Rabbi Yerucham. Now, he has a sefer. So Rabbi Stein told me that there is a sefer of Rav Yerucham Levavitz's own writings, and they are on the Chumash. So this is, I spoke to him again, and this was perfect. What's the relationship between him and Rav Dessler? I think he was older than Rav Dessler, but they probably had similar paths. So with that introduction, we open up our new approach, with the help of Hashem, to study the Sefer on Chumash of Rav Yerucham Lubavitch, called Das Torah. Das Torah means the Torah mind. I guess that would be the best way to translate it. And I'm hoping by this to be able to really we have gotten, I believe, somewhat of a foundation of principles of concepts from the study of Rav Dessler, and I hope to integrate that more and to develop and deepen it more, our understanding of it, and particularly through the Chumash. There was one particular angle which I thought would be important to take from this. We have worked with the assumption that is really written in much, much earlier Sefarim. The Derech Hashem, to name one, by Rav Luzzatto, 400 years ago, that our purpose in life, God created this world with a purpose, and that purpose is to know Him, to connect with Him, to draw close with Him. And that really comes synonymously with choosing life over death, or choosing good over evil, tov over ra. And Hashem placed us in a world where there is tov and ra, there is good and evil, there is a choice of life and death, which means there is a choice to be close to God or to be distant from God. We have the capacity to go either way. And that's basically our purpose here. That's basically our purpose. This good and evil is manifest in two realms, internally and externally. There is good and evil all around us in the world, and there's good and evil inside of us. We're all familiar, I think even the youngest children are familiar with the terms Yetzer HaTov and Yetzer Hara, the good inclination and the evil inclination. We have both. So I know that this is an important aspect of Musar, and I thought to myself, as I read some of his commentaries, you know, it would be really good to get somewhat of an orientation into what the Torah teaches us and what the Musar teachers teach us about the nature of this Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. What is it that goes on inside of us? And sure enough, in both Parsha Bereishis and Parshas Noach, this is a major theme. And what I'd like to do today is share with you three or four basic insights into the Yetzer Hara, into the evil inclination, each coming from a different verse, okay, and a different episode. The first is the episode of Adam and Eve and the serpent. The second is the episode of Cain and Abel. And the third is in the Parsha of Noah. We didn't have a class on Bereishis, so I feel it's okay to refer back to Bereishis. And then the third is a pasuk in Noah. And it is through these psukim, Rabbi Lubavitch seems to have opened up a chumash, he read the pasuk, and he read the Rashi, and that's why I went to get the art school Rashi, because I want to read to you in the Rashi with its accurate translation. And with his Das Torah, with his Torah mind, he told us what is really being said here. And he opens up for us and expands for us the notion of Tov and Ra, good and evil. Okay, source number one is a verse in Bereishis, the Parsha Bereishis, beginning of chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 1. And let's just read the Chumash and the Rashi. I'll read a few Pesukim. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field that Hashem God has made. Vayomer el ha'isha, af ki amar Elokim lo sochlu mikol eitz hagan. He said to the woman, did perhaps God say, you shall not eat of any tree of the garden? Rashi says, v'anocha shaya arum. Now the serpent was more cunning. I neglected to read a verse before that. The verse before the story of the serpent says, they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. And then it says, immediately, now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field. So Rashi wants to know, why are these two verses juxtaposed? It should have juxtaposed, and Hashem made for Adam and his wife garments of skin, and he clothed them right after it said that they were naked. But the verse has taught you, out of what notion the snake jumped? What made him be stirred to action at them? He saw them naked and engaging in relations visible to all, and he desired her. Okay, the footnote quotes a midrash, the snake intended that Adam eat of the tree and die, and that afterwards he would marry Eve. By the way, the serpent was nothing like we know him today. It was a walking, talking creature. Dinosaur, perhaps? I don't know. Now, that was earlier. But the serpent is not what we know. The serpent was cursed that it would slither around on the ground. The serpent was a different thing. But Rav Yerucham says, we have in our tradition, it's not his novelty, that the serpent is synonymous or symbolic of the Yetzer Hara. So, this all came about, Adam and Eve's sin came about because of the Yetzer Hara. So how did the Yetzer Hara get his grips and his influence on these giant people, Adam and Eve? And so with careful attention to the words of the Chumash and the words of Rashi, Rav Yerucham says, we can learn here several lessons about the Yetzer Hara. Lesson number one is that the Yetzer Hara needs to get in an open door in order to have any influence. Rashi asks a question. Rashi says, out of what notion did the snake jump at them? There's a supposition over here that in order for the Yetzer Hara to have any effect, it has to have some type of an entryway, some type of an entree. And Rashi's question tells you that. And the answer is that they were doing something, and again, it doesn't say that what they were doing was wrong, but that's not the point. The point is the Nachash was able to work because a door was opened.
The door was his desire.
The door was his desire, but he didn't have the desire until he saw something, or until he noticed something. So the first point is that the Yetzer Hara will jump where it is stimulated to jump, or where it is allowed to jump. The implication is that if the Yetzer Hara is not given a door, it may be there. As we will see later, it is definitely there. But it won't jump. It won't attack. It only attacks where there is some notion or some stimulus that beckons it. That's lesson number one. Lesson number two is, listen to the first words that the serpent said to Eve. He said to the woman, "Did perhaps God say you shall not eat of any tree of the garden?" Did God ever say you can't eat of any tree of the garden? Preposterous. He said you can eat. He said back in that area, it says, from every tree of the garden you can eat. You just can't eat from this tree. The serpent says, "I'll bet God said you can't eat of any of the trees." And then she said, "No, we can eat. We just can't eat from this one." Why did the serpent make up this? He didn't say you can't eat from that. Right. He couldn't eat from it after they ate from the tree of knowledge. But why did the serpent say something? Why did he say a lie?
To get information.
He knew. He knew.
He was cunning beyond any beast, so he did that to confuse her.
Mm-hmm.
To get her off guard.
Okay. So how did that work? What's the psychology of the...
To make her unsure of what she should have known.
And she seems to have passed the test because immediately she said, "No, we can't eat from all the trees." Did he think that he was going to throw her off? What's the insight here? Says Rav Yerucham, the insight is that the way the Yetzer Hara works is it tries to blow everything out of proportion. And Rav Yerucham illustrates this with a personal experience. He says that there was a time when he had suffered from Mara, which is, I think, the gallbladder. And he had to be put on a strict diet. And the doctor told him that he can't eat eggs. Doctors? Sound familiar? Cholesterol? I don't know. Unless, maybe I'm translating the Mara wrong. Maybe the Mara is the... Maybe. So, he remembers thinking... when the doctor said that, "Oy vey, what am I going to be able to eat? What am I going to... Eggs is a staple. What am I going to be able to eat? I'm not going to have anything else." He started worrying. And then, but he stuck to his restriction, and he found out that he can live fine without eggs. And he realized that his mind was playing tricks on him. Or it's not really the mind, it's the Yetzer Hara. That the Yetzer Hara, what it does is, it blows things out of proportion. It makes you think that there's so much. And there's so many restrictions. And you're not going to be able to do this. Impossible. Cannot possibly change. Cannot live your life this way. He even quotes that he's heard many people, in those days already, many people had left the path of observance, and he would hear people always say, "It's not possible to follow the laws of the Torah. There are too many. We can't eat this. We can't eat pig. We can't eat milk and meat. We can't eat worms. What's there left to eat?" Baruch Hashem, I know many observant people, and they do just fine. There's plenty to eat. So what is it? Why are those who are not keeping kosher saying that there's nothing to eat? That's the nature of the Yetzer Hara. It blows things out of proportion. And when you try it, you'll find out it's not so bad. That's an insight into the Yetzer Hara. So that's why the serpent says... the Mussar approach to Torah is every... this is not a story, but it's a lesson. It's a lesson to be taken home. Okay, so that's incident number one. So we've learned from chapter 3, verse 1, from the approach of the Nachash to Chava, number one, that if you don't give the Yetzer Hara the open door, he'll stay outside. Number two is that be careful because the Yetzer Hara is probably going to blow everything out of proportion. Just realize that that's his custom. Don't get overwhelmed. It's not so terrible. Okay, the second verse is at the after the incident of the death, of the killing of Cain to his brother Hevel. chapter 4, verse 7. I'll have to back up, because the story is, as everyone is familiar, that after a period of time, Cain brought an offering to Hashem of the fruit of the ground, and as for Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and from their choicest. So Cain was a farmer, Hevel was a shepherd, each one brought an offering to God, but Abel brought the finest, and Cain did not. Hashem turned to Abel and to his offering, but to Cain and his offering he did not turn. This annoyed Cain exceedingly, and his countenance fell. And Hashem said to Cain, now this is before he killed him. Hashem approaches Cain when Cain is seething. Hashem comes to Cain and says, "Vayomer Hashem al Cain, lama charalach v'lama naflu fanecha? Why are you annoyed? And why has your countenance fallen? Halo im teitiv se'es. Vim lo se'tiv la pesa chatas rovets. V'yelecha teshuka so. V'yata tim sholbo. Is it not true that if you do good, you will be forgiven? But if you do not do good, at the entrance, sin crouches. Its longing is toward you, yet you will rule over it." The verse is kind of enigmatic or poetic. What exactly is being said here? If you do good, you will be forgiven. But if you do not do good, at the entrance, sin crouches. Its longing is toward you, yet you will rule over it. Rashi expounds. He says its explanation is as Targum Onkelos renders it, which this is really, the translation is based on Onkelos, the Aramaic translation. Is it not true that if you improve your actions, it will be forgiven for you? But this is how Rav Yerucham explains the verse. And this is what he says is a lesson which shakes us, really. And that is that the evil inclination is always there. It's always standing, ready, wanting to attack. Its longing is toward you. But if you do good, it will leave you alone. If you do good, it will leave you alone. If you don't do good, la pesach, at the entrance, what is this entrance? This is the entrance that we saw before, the nachash, the serpent, looking for that entrance. The yetzer hara, this pasuk is talking about the yetzer hara. The Yetzer Hara is at the entrance. Chatas rovets. He calls the chatas, the sin, he says, is the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, the cause of the sin. No, I shouldn't say the cause of the sin. Man is the cause of the sin. But the Yetzer Hara is the impulse, or the thought. Chatas rovets. The sin is crouching, it's hovering, it's ready, looking for that opening. Ve'elecha teshuka so, but boy, how it longs to overcome the person. He says that there's a medrash that says, how many times does the word teshuka, longing, appear in the Chumash? And the medrash quotes about four different times. One of them is how the Yetzer Hara longs for the man. And another verse says how HaKadosh Baruch Hu longs for the Jewish people. So Rav Yerucham says, whoa, that's a pretty powerful longing. Because we know how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu longs for the Jewish people. Right? It's unimaginable. So that's the same degree that the Yetzer Hara longs for the person. It's powerful. And you know what? There's only one way to stop it. Don't give it an entrance. Or, do good. If you do good, it'll leave you alone. It will be powerless. If you don't do good, it's right there. So it's powerful. It's powerful both in the negative side and in the powerful side, in the positive side. Look how powerful good is. And then this would fill us with a desire to know, what is good? How can I do good? But now the question will be, how can I do good all the time? Because if I don't do good all the time, it's waiting. It opens up a whole new level of understanding where good and evil is. Okay, so to summarize, point number two is, or verse number two teaches us the idea of the strength and the constancy of the Yetzer Hara. And yet, that the force of good stops it in its tracks. And now, that leads me to the third and final point, which will, I think, really make it clear. The third verse is from Parshas Noach. In Parshas Noach, this is past this story of the flood. Vayivan Noach Mizbeach Lashem, this is verse 20. It's chapter 8. Noach built an altar to Hashem. Vayikach mikol ha-behemo ha-tehoro u-mikol ha-of ha-tahor vayal olos ba-mizbeach. He took every pure animal and every pure bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. Vayorach Hashem esreach ha-nichoach vayomer Hashem elibo. Hashem smelled the pleasing aroma and Hashem said in his heart, lo osif lekalel od eso adama bavur ha-adam. I will not continue to curse again the ground because of man. Ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra minu urav. Because since the design of man's heart is evil from his youth. In other words, I know where man is coming from. I made him that way. So I'm not going to curse them anymore. Or I'm not going to curse the ground because of man. I'm not going to smite every living being as I have done. This is where he makes the rainbow and he says, this won't happen again. Okay, but the expression here that's important is, ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra minu rav. The design of man's heart is evil from his youth. Okay, now we'll come back to that in a moment. Rav Yerucham asks the question. It's a great question because it sounds like anybody would ask it. And probably we all do. He says, if you look through the Torah, you see that man is always struggling with his Yetzer Hara. From the beginning, the first story of Adam and Eve, till the very end, we have so many incidents in the Chumash, the desert, the 40 years in the desert, so many incidences. Everyone is busy fighting the Yetzer Hara. He says, let's ask a question. Is it really necessary? Why can't a person just pick the neutral ground? Let him be neutral. He'll be plain. He'll be a simple person. He won't get involved in the big struggles. He'll do his job. He'll go to work or his business. He'll make a living. He'll have his life. And he won't get involved in the fight with the evil inclination. He won't do any big averas, and he won't do any big mitzvahs either. He's just going to be neutral. Neutral people are also okay. After all, I'm adding this, you know. Doesn't it say that some people are righteous and some people are wicked and some people are in between? So I'll just be in between. I'll just stay in the middle. I won't be on either side. Is it a good question? Is that an option?
Well, if the Yetzer Hara is always wanting things, it doesn't seem to be an option.
That's the door.
I'm sorry?
That's the door.
No, I'm not going to let him get in. I'm not going to do anything bad. I'm not going to do anything good. Just stay in the middle. I'll keep the door closed.
But you can't keep the door closed without doing good.
Well, how? Why can't?
When you cut yourself off, you're not.
I'll just be in the middle. Just be in the middle.
What does the Lord say to Cain already?
Yeah, but it's only if there's an entrance. I won't give him an entrance. I'll. What is it? See no evil. Hear no evil. Do no evil. Right?
Speak no evil.
Speak no evil. Hear no evil. Do no evil. I'll be like that. What's wrong with that? So I won't make it to the Hall of Fame. But I won't be a bad person either. Why can't a person say that? So first of all, he says, try an experiment. He says, go to work and see, you know, assuming you're going to work with colleagues and all different kinds of relationships, go to the office for one day and see if you can remain neutral. Try it. He says, you're not going to last. There's no way that you're just going to be able to go there and remain neutral. You're either going to see something happen and you're going to run to be the, you know, the valiant hero, or someone's going to step on your toes and you're going to lash back at him, or whatever. He says, try it, see how long you can last. But then he says, look at the pasuk. When does the Yetzer Hara start? When does the Yetzer Hara start in a person's life? When is the Yetzer Hara born?
At the time the individual enters into earth.
When he becomes bar mitzvah, when he becomes an adolescent, when he becomes an adult, when?
Infancy.
It says, the design of man's heart is evil from his youth. Okay, now youth, what do you define as youth? You know?
When you start talking.
So Rashi says, when you start talking, Rashi says, it says, mine arav. It doesn't say mine urav. Now this is a grammatical distinction which we may not understand, but it is written as if it were read min arav. This teaches us, it's not really from the word youth, as Rashi points out grammatically. It's from the word, from the time that he stirs. Latseis mimei imo, to go out of his mother's insides. From the moment he's born. In fact, from the moment his labor starts. That's what it says in the Chumash, okay? This is not a psychological research data, but it says in the Chumash, God says that I place the Yetzer Hara, force of evil, into the human being when the labor pangs start. The urge to do evil is put in him. Now, whoa, I can't accept that. Number one, the baby has no thoughts. The baby has no awareness or consciousness of good or evil. It's just at that point, it's only instinct. Doesn't know what he's doing. And have you ever met anybody which is more neutral than a baby? A baby is just, it doesn't have any evil designs or any good urges, or it's just neutral. What do you mean there's a Yetzer Hara there? So Rav Yerucham says, we see from here that the Yetzer Hara is implanted in us, and whether we realize it or not, it's working. Whether we realize it or not, it's working.
The question was, when was it born?
Yeah.
Not when it became active. You asked, when was it born?
Well, it's already active. That's what it's saying. Yetzer Lev Hadam Ra Minu Urav. From the time he's coming out of his mother. And it doesn't say, and then it goes through different changes.
Okay.
That's when it begins. And all the things that we've learned about it begins then. It's longing for the person. It's looking for the opening and all that kind of stuff. And it's constant. What?
How does he know?
How does who know?
He says that.
Rashi says it.
Rashi says it
from the Chumash. The Pasuk says it. So, now there's an interesting question. People say, how come the Yetzer Hara is so strong? And the answer is because it's 13 years older than the Yetzer HaTov. Because when is the Yetzer HaTov born? Bar and Bat Mitzvah.
Yeah.
So, has a 13-year advantage, head start, for the Yetzer Hara. But that's another thing. But here's the thing. Rav Yerucham is telling us that the Yetzer Hara is at work even on a neutral baby. Therefore, that refutes the person who would say, I'm just going to remain neutral. He says, from here you learn that there's no such thing as neutrality. And it's not possible for a person just to not do good and not do evil. In fact, based on the other pasuk that Hashem said to Cain, it's quite the opposite. Either you're doing good, im teitiv se'es, if you improve yourself, you will be forgiven, or you will overcome the Yetzer Hara. But if not, that Yetzer Hara is there. So again, like I said, we have to ask ourselves, not how do I do good, or what is good, we have to ask ourselves, how can I be doing good constantly? Because if I'm not doing good at any moment, the Yetzer Hara is struggling, and if I give it an opening, it's going to be very hard to resist. And even though I don't realize it, even though I don't realize that what I'm doing is bad, and I don't have the intention, you learn that also from the baby, it's working on me. Them's the facts. That's what Rav Yerucham is teaching us in the insights, what the Torah has to say about you and I. Yes?
How can one refute the idea of the opening? Because the person didn't do anything.
Right.
Move.
Right. So it could be... Right. It could be that the Yetzer Hara is there, as we said before. The Yetzer Hara is crouching. It's looking for the opening, and if you don't give it an opening, it will just be there and it will not be effective. And the baby is not held accountable for anything that it did. It's not sinning. It's got the Yetzer Hara, but it's not committing any sins. Probably you're right that there's an element of choice in the opening. But the Yetzer Hara is there behind the door. And it won't attack unless we give it an opening. So an opening could be something like a conversation, entertaining it. Like one of the things that he went over to her, to Chava, and he started talking with her. And the fact that she was talking about it, the fact that she was entertaining it, and she was, if she would have said, not talking to you, he wouldn't have bothered her, right? Many times a person, there's a temptation. The person has the choice. Rav Orlowick came to Atlanta one time and he says, you're never held responsible for things that happen to you. In other words, if you're walking down the street and a billboard pops up at you and you happen to see it, that wasn't your action. That wasn't your choice, right? Your choice begins after you see it. So if you decide, you could say, I'll have one look, and that's it. Or you could say, not even a look. That's the difference between an opening, and I don't know, you could still win the war, but it's harder. So, anyways, that's the idea.
There's a 13-year difference here between when the Yetzer Hara is active and the Yetzer Tov is active. It makes the parental supervision of the child extremely important then, doesn't it?
Correct. Children are the most impressionable, because of that. Excellent.
To me this makes a great deal of sense, because God created us as needy individuals. We have many needs from the moment of our birth, and those needs create demands on the external world. And that puts us in a...
Vulnerable position.
Vulnerable and demanding posture.
Right.
Right.
I think that's the main point here, is that there's no such thing as a vacation. As long as we are alive, we have to fight. There was once a story of somebody, one of the great Bali Musar of the last few generations ago, who was on his deathbed, and he was very weak. And a student comes to him. A student really, wants to learn, so he whispers to his Rebbe, Rebbe, is the Yetzer Hara still active against you? And he said, of course. He says, but Rebbe, what could you possibly do in your position? He says, the Yetzer Hara is causing me to think of a thought that make sure that in my final moments I say the Shema very loud so that everyone can hear me and they can say, look at that righteous man who said Shema, who died with Shema on his lips. So that's what I'm struggling with. The kavod, the honor, you know.
You said a child is not, he's not sinning, he's not responsible, and yet it doesn't match up.
Well, for one thing, God didn't give him the Yetzer Tov, and so he wasn't given the proper armor, the proper, the proper ammunition to fight against it. And I was also saying that if it's one of these things where it's not done by choice, then it would not be regarded as a sin.
Yeah, right.
The Yetzer Hara is still a force which is there behind him. A baby, let's say, a baby is very selfish. Yeah, baby is constantly totally self-centered, and yet you don't say the baby sinned.
So what is the Yetzer Hara's part in that? In other words, let's say the baby does something. He takes her brother's apple.
Right.
So is it discounted when he...
No, it's not a sin, but it's a force which is being developed within that person, and that's what's giving the person the playing field for life, because he's going to have to learn how to battle between the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Ra. And this is how God made people.
So if the child is not taught... As he grows, the Yetzer Hara will increase its power on him?
That's true. If you have to start teaching a child to... That's why they say that it's so important in parenting to learn how to say no. If you don't say no, then the child will never say no.
So we have to watch out for those pop-ups.
Like on a video game or something?
On your television, when you turn it on, there's pop-ups.
Oh.
You said we're not responsible for things that influence that are pop-ups that just come that we weren't looking for.
Right.
But they're there. They're there, and we might stop and look at them.
Right.
So what do you do? You have to just hit them right.
If you don't look even once, how do you know what's on it?
Right.
If you don't look even once, how do you know what's on it?
I'm not recommending this for anybody, but I have a Rebbe. I never saw this, but I know that he doesn't wear glasses. I didn't know that he was nearsighted. Somebody once told me that he doesn't wear glasses. This is a good story for the optometrist. But somebody told me that he didn't wear glasses because he said, anything that I want to see, I can see without my glasses. Anything that I can't see without my glasses, I don't want to see.
Isn't that sort of self-serving, isn't it? You've decided that, what you're going to see or not. Maybe you're supposed to see a lot more.
I'm not saying I recommend this, and I don't know on what level he's at. But to say to you too, again, I'm not recommending, but there's one way to avoid the pop-ups. If you don't turn on the television, you won't see the pop-ups. I'm not saying that therefore it's wrong to watch television, but the point is that everything is a Pesach. Turning on the television is a Pesach. That means we are saying, I'm now taking responsibility because I'm turning it on that I might see something which will be inappropriate. Or now I'm...
Then you can overrule that.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Sometimes you can.
Yes, you can, but how do you know? Adam thought that he could too.
But what if your business is television production.
There's actually a halachic principle in the Talmud that while a person is busy working, he's not overcome by the Yetzer Hara. For example, is it permissible for a halachic person to be a doctor for women, a man? And the answer is, again, I'm not saying it's recommended, it's a first choice, but there's a halachic principle that says yes, because he is busy working. If he's not busy working, if it's after hours, then he better run, you know, like with a 10-foot pole. But there is such a principle like that. Has to do with seclusion and so forth. Halachically, it is halachically. I think the government may be stricter than the halacha in that situation.
Right. You can't avoid
while you're working.
Yeah, you can't avoid the thing. Suppose you're a book publisher. I mean, your business
right.
is you make books.
Right.
It comes to you, says, okay, print my book. And
right.
discovered in the book is a picture of, you know,
right.
something that you should, but you don't know until you see it. And you can't just, you know, okay, I won't publish books. I won't
right.
lie. I won't do that. I'll sit at home and never do anything. You have to confront the possibility
right.
sometimes.
In Emirat Hashem, I have a feeling that throughout this study of the Chumash, there's going to be much more telling us how one does properly engage in the battle.
Okay.
What we're learning today is that there is a battle. And these are the...
Shkoyach.
Shkoyach.